long should it take to get over a relationship? How long is the right amount of time to take to get over a relationship? It seems that some people like to take, I don't know if like is the right word, but some people can take 6 months or 12 months. Some people can take 6 or 12 years. Some people can take 6 or 12 weeks. Some people seem to be able to take 6 or 12 hours. How does that work, Mike? And how are people able to do this? What methods do you use? How do you deal with this?
Yeah, it's the first thing that came to mind here was different experiences of different people. So in our last podcast, I think it was the last one, we were having a discussion around Chantel, and I know that she has the ability to move very quickly between romantic partners. She makes her mind up, she gets the lesson, she integrates it, bang, she's on to the next one within days.
Beautiful, love it.
Yeah, it's brutal and fast and efficient, and she doesn't waste any time. So if I was to pull that experience apart, my question would be, and this is where I always learn from the masters, I'm like, what is she doing? How can she do that? And I also understand that there's a nuance between male and female, not necessarily masculine and feminine, but male and female. So women tend to appear to move on faster, but that's because I think they actually leave the relationship before they physically leave.
Mm.
Yeah, they prepare. It's like that their feminine nature of them is to harvest and gather all the berries and the nuts and the seeds for the home. Well, they do this in the relationship. They integrate the breakup in the relationship so that when they leave, they can almost catapult into moving forward freely or going on to a next relationship.
Do you know the stats on that, Mike? Like, let's say if we compared men to women in just getting over things in general and integrating and dealing with things, women compared to men?
There would be stats. I know there would be stats, and it's, yeah. I don't have the numbers, but I just know anecdotal evidence from my own experience, the men that I work with.
Yeah.
Most relationship breakups, men are quite surprised at the breakup because they don't see it coming.
Yeah.
They're like, I know things are not great, but like really to break up?
Yeah.
And she left the relationship 12 months ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is where it's quite challenging for men because it sort of catches them unaware.
Yeah.
But I don't know the exact numbers, no.
Yeah, 100%. I would say with my experience that it's the men seem to have a longer period, more consistently across the board with, especially with, breakups in relationships.
And then I also break down and look at it like, okay, why? Why to do that? Why does this happen? Is it men that are not aware? Are they not in tune? Are they ignorant? Are they choosing not to see what's in front of them?
Yep.
Or are they not connected to their body and they're all in their head?
Yep.
All are applicable.
I just wrote down the lesson and the integration. I feel like you might have hit the nail on the head there in saying the integration because, that integration of the experience and the process as opposed to being caught up in the story, let's say maybe the victim of the experience and how could this happen to me and I didn't see this coming, as opposed to this has happened for a reason and what have I learned, and looking at that side of things.
So when you first came up with the question, that was my first download that came through. It's like, this is the integration period. So if we drew a parallel with, say, plant medicine, and let's say you and I, we went on a plant medicine journey. We went and did ayahuasca as an example. And we both sit in the same ceremony. We both finish at the same time. And you come out as one version of it and you're like, oh my God, I saw this. I got that. And you go about integrating that and bringing that into your reality.
Yep.
I could go into it like I'm still holding on to the, oh my God, I just spent 12 hours throwing up. I shit myself. I did all the other things. And I'm still in the trauma or the chaos of the event, as opposed to seeing and integrating the actual beauty of it.
Yeah, beautiful. I think another thing too is, what we grow up learning. Like I always think of my dad and how he would always say, like when him and my mum went through a separation, how no matter what, I'll never leave your mum. Like I'm never, till death and do us part and all those sorts of things. And that's beautiful. And I really see that beauty in that. But then when the relationship ended and things went a bit belly up, the trauma that he I'll just say, chose to put himself through along that journey is, I don't think it needed to kind of be that way, but for him, I guess it did. And that was the learning in that. Who am I to judge? But there was a solid 10, 12, 15 year period there that the, you know, he sat in that pretty consistently across the board. And at what point do you draw the line and, you know, maybe do the work, or how do you go about navigating that?
Yeah, I see that as well. My mum did the same thing. Really similar experience. And I think it comes down to, like all things, our childhood patterning is the stories that we were told in our formative years, which forms our view of the world. And when someone challenges that view of the world, we hold on to it even tighter because that's our identity.
Hmm.
And but it must be this way. And when we believe that and we label something, we lose all of our potential and all other perspectives, and we lose our power to it.
Yeah.
So I have to hold this worldview, otherwise my identity will crash. And I think my mum, you know, was a death till death do us part, and that message was embedded into me deeply.
Yeah.
And so I also suffer with that same fate.
Yeah.
Not as, you know, it's a diminished version of my mum, but it's still a story that I have to, because if I remove myself from this story, that means I'm removing myself from my family, which is the one place I can feel safe to be loved. And all of a sudden that's me having to go without love, which is why we hold on to our stories so much.
Yeah.
Because it will separate us from our parents.
Yeah, 100%. And I love flipping that around to, you know, I will do my best to love you till death do us part. However, if you ever choose to not want to be with me any longer, I will still do my best to love you and support you in your journey, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the missing ingredient with, I always said, you know, if I ever get married in a church or something one day, I'd have to add that little bit into the vow, because it's my authentic truth that, you know, if you choose that you don't want to be with me anymore, I'm going to love you. I'm going to love you, and I'm going to do my best to support you. And I think that's, you know, shedding that light on that shadow is really important to be in that. Like if someone wants to end that relationship, the quicker you can come back to love and support of that, can really have an incredibly positive impact on the outcome of how that relationship continues in the future. Not saying that that's easy to do necessarily, but, you know, that's what, again, Chantel had taught me when I did my studies with her, was how to, you know, move that energy through breath, sound, and movement pretty quickly and efficiently to then be able to come back to the let's say, the perpetrator with love and not see her as a perpetrator, but see her as, you know, this is your journey, and my truth is that I really want you to do and experience everything you've ever wished for in this lifetime. And if that is no longer being with me as your beloved, I really want to step up and do everything I can to support you.
Yeah, I learned that from you. That was something I adopted in my last relationship. I remember exactly where I was sitting. I remember we were probably on a call very similar to this, and I remember that lesson, and it was one of the most beautiful gifts that have been given to me, and it was by you. No matter what someone's choice is, can I do my best to help them get there? You know, if that's a beloved, if your choice is to leave, can I love you in the leaving? Can I uncouple in a really healthy and conscious way? And look, it's just, you know, it's not me anymore, and I want you to be happy. That's the most important thing. And that was really beautiful. That changed a lot for me, because I was very much till death do us part until that point. And it was to my death do us part, you know, because I was dying in the process of holding under something that was already dead. And so when you unraveled that for me, it was very much a gift that you gave to me and my beloved at the time, who was leaving. It was really beautiful, and it changed a lot for me, just that simple paradigm shift, you know. And we've had a number of conversations since that time around, you know, breakups and things like that, and what does it take. And I think coming back to that integration piece is crucial. Can you sit with yourself, like you said, with breath, sound, and movement, and process the feelings, feel them all, drop into your body and experience them, and then see, what gift did this person leave me? What has he or she birthed in me through this relationship container, through this romantic container? And if I can unpack the gift, I can see them as my greatest ally as opposed to adversary.
Yeah, definitely. And we're not saying that this is necessarily easy to do this either, right? And I'm not saying that you're not going to fail time and time and time again. But as you develop a practice, a routine, let's say, and a practice to, I'm doing the thing that I do again, and I'm losing my shit and projecting it onto someone else. I don't have myself to even creating boundaries in that situation to clearly voice that and say, hey, I've got these things coming up for me right now. My truth is I really don't want to project this onto you, and I'm feeling like I don't have the capacity to hold that space right now. I'm losing myself in this. Do you mind if I take a day or a week or however long I need to go and move some energy, because I really want to come back to you to the best of my ability with love and support you, but I can't do that right now. I'm presencing that, you know, that power of shedding that light on that darkness. And then maybe you go out and spend 3 days punching the dirt and screaming at trees or whatever. But you know, what a beautiful place to do that in nature or wherever it might be for you, to move that, to then come back again by shedding that light on that darkness and presencing all those feelings, that aggression, those crazy thoughts of, well, that happened and that happened, and then, well, what if I'd done this differently, and that, we'll do all that stuff, you know, get it out of you, feel it, you know, get out of the mind if you can, or, you know, be in the mind to get out of the mind, to move that energy, breath, sound and movement, and see what comes out beyond the words. Because beyond the words, you know, we've spoken about this in other podcasts, but that thing of 100 different ways to say I love you, you know, from saying it from a place of love to a place of fear to a place of anger to a place of jealousy and all those things. For those that didn't hear that, like something like, but I love you, compared to, but I love you, I love you. You know, there's a very different energy with those same three words. So, it's a journey.
Yeah. I'm going to extract something that you said then, is I'm losing myself.
Yeah.
And that's really important, because when we have two whole individuals who are perfect, whole and complete, and know that they are, that I don't need anything from you and you don't need anything from me. Yeah. When this uncoupling happens, it's like, well, you're not taking anything from me, not a life source or force for me. I actually have my own, and I have everything that I need within me. But when we feel or we lose ourselves, when we become incomplete and we're reliant, one, it's codependent. And when that person leaves, it's like the heartbeat leaving. And how dare you? How could you? This is everything to me. You're killing me in this process, which are the words that come out, right?
Yeah.
They're all the unconscious words. And so what I love about what you just shared, Dan, is that can we catch that we've lost ourselves in this moment, step away, breath, sound, and movement, regather, regain, come back to wholeness, and then come back to the situation from a place of wholeness of like, you know what, I'm already complete and you were complimenting me, but you're no longer doing that. And can I love you and let you go?
Yeah. Yeah. And just knowing that that's okay. And it's, I feel like this word of normal, it's normal for this to be your life's work. Like you never quite nail it. You're never going to get it. You're never going to be a master of this. The amount of times in sessions I've had people say things like, wow, you're just such a master of this. And I'm like, I'm so not. I fuck it up all the time, you know? But that's how I learn. And I have what I do have is the ability to see myself, ideally to do my, let's say I'm committed to seeing through the haze of my own ego or my own shit, to do the work that I, to constantly come back to doing the work, to put myself in those thought processes to, hey, could I have gone about that in a better way? Am I in trigger? What do I need to do to move through that? Maybe it's time I politely ask to, you know, or politely share what I'm feeling and say something like I just said before. I think I need to go and process some things for a bit. And you know, and just I love that idea of shedding light on the fact that I think I need to process. That in itself is a huge achievement for someone often, and it's a beautiful buffer to, I think of like Eckhart Tolle, I think of The Power of Now, and I think about that incredible text, and you know, being able to integrate that ability to be in the now and how much of a practice that is for me and a lot of other people that I love and respect. that commitment to that practice of doing the things to come back into the now. And at first, when you say read that book, a lot of people, it takes them months even maybe to go back and maybe have a second read of it, and then a few more things land and they're like, yeah, like, and then maybe they're able to process things and look back on something that happened, maybe that they don't resonate 100% with their behavior, maybe 48 hours later. And then maybe it's 24 hours later, they do something, they're like, oh, I did that thing again yesterday that I don't like it really when I do. And then 6 hours later, and slowly the integration time becomes ideally to the point where you can get it in real time, where you can catch yourself. But, you know, for a lot of people, they have no interest in that journey either, and that's okay. I remember once my dad saying something to me like, why do you do this stuff? Like, what isn't that just like heaps of energy to like, why don't you just go and like, you know, whatever? And it's like, well, yeah, I can't not. Like, it's too, there's too much magic in these thought processes to not do it. I'm kind of like, how can you not do it? But I'm also like, that's okay. I don't need you to do it, or, you know, I want you to do you. But is it possible that, you know, those sorts of things.
They say ignorance is bliss. So until you know, until you've gone down that first rabbit hole, it is quite blissful. But then you can go back once you have explored that realm.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's two points I'd love to cover off. First one was a short one. I also think it comes down to someone's epigenetic profile. You know, I'm a diplomat, so I like to be slow and steady and short and really make sure and really know and have all the information. And someone who's a sensor can process very fast and very quickly because they've sensed and felt everything as it's live and as it's processing.
Mm.
And the processing time could be like, if we were in a, like a day process, the sensor might be through in half an hour. I'd be there for the whole 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could, those epigenetic profiles could come into play with decision-making as well.
Yeah.
As well as childhood and whatnot. But stepping outside of that, what would be some of these practices that you mentioned? What would you suggest, or what's your go-to?
Yeah, it's I guess it's different every time, but I think just the main practice, I think, is doing our best to keep our hearts open to all the possibilities. This thing of, you know, truth and illusion, like it's so easy to get caught in a truth. No, you did this because of that, and that's how it is. You know, that closed heart kind of victim modality, I think it's just coming into service. The practice that I practice is coming into service. How can I best step into service to assist this person on their journey and assist myself? Of course, I can't do that. I can't even begin to help someone else on their journey unless I've got myself and I'm helping myself on my own journey and being where I want to be. So that's number one. And then number two, coming into service for the greater good of humanity and every individual whose paths we cross, or I cross ideally, but especially my beloved or my ex-beloved. You know, it always blows me away, that thing from love to hate too. Like, how can you go from being so deeply in love with someone to hating them? Like that?
I don't understand that.
And that's okay. We don't need to understand that. I think I definitely heard it summed up once, that's that difference between a love-based relationship and a lust-based relationship. That landed with me. That process, to answer your question, I think just doing my best to keep my heart open to, oh man, there's so many things. It's, you know, the people I hang out with, the texts that I listen to, the work that I choose to do, the courses, the music, man, the music, you know, the playing music and having that outlet. But, you know, when the shit hits the fan, definitely, you know, breath, sound, and movement is a go-to, and doing my best not to project my shit onto others.
Yeah, that's me.
What's yours? Yeah.
Yeah, for the same. For the when the shit hits the fan, I've got like this protocol. It's like, in case of emergency, break glass. For me, depending on the severity of it for me, and if I could really feel it, I'll step away. And the first thing is I remove any anger. Because anger is the protective mechanism for any of the emotions. It helped shield myself. So I release the anger. And then my next steps would be breath and sound. If that's still not working, I'll do an ice bath. And if that's still not working, I lay on my shiitake mat. Have you got one of those, or you use one of those?
I think I don't have one, but what is that again? It's the little...
It's a little mat. It's about a meter long.
Yep.
And I don't know, whatever wide. And it's got
little dots, right? Little
acupuncture points.
Yeah, I used to have one years ago.
I use it daily. I stand on it every morning and do qigong to build up my resistance to pain and to tolerate. So when I'm on this mat, I'll be in a qigong position, which is quite, it's a stance, which is quite tiring. And all of my pressure is going from my feet on this mat. And it's like hundreds of little acupressure points in my feet. And how much can I regulate my heart rate, my poise and my centeredness during the fire, during the heat? So I practice every day for these moments. So that when the heat comes into my space, I'm like, oh, I've been here before. Dropping on a stand. But the shiitake mat, when I lay on it on my back and I have it on the back of my head and my neck, which is really quite painful, you have no choice to be other than being present, because if you're not, you experience all the pain. But when you can surrender to the initial pain, it's the most blissful state I've ever been in, is laying on these bed of nails. It's incredible. So that's my practice. And what that does is, it in that moment, if I've tried all the other modalities, everything just goes into a centered space. And I really drop in, and then I can walk out of that room and be completely like, what event? There was no event. I'm good. There's no charge.
Mm-hmm.
But I've done all the things.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, the bed of nails, that's like a thing, right? That's maybe the practice where that originally came from or something. I'm not sure, but that's a thing that people do too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it really gets you centered. You cannot be thinking about any other thing, because every pinpoint will be make itself very aware and very apparent. But when you can just breathe into it and surrender and drop into it and actually push your weight into it and submit to that, it's almost like submitting to a higher power. And then there's this pressure point from all of the pins which hit pressure points in the body, which help you unravel and unwind, and all the stress and the tension unwinds. It's quite incredible. So I practice that every morning.
I love that, brother. What was your second question?
That was, the first one was around the practices. What were the practices?
Yep.
And the first one was around the epigenetics, which I already shared that.
Yeah. So can you tell me a bit more about that? Because I don't know that world so much. What's that world?
I'm not au fait with much outside my own profile.
Okay.
I know that there's activators, there's guardians, there's a sensor, there is a diplomat, which is myself.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of these profiles is based on my genetic imprint.
Okay.
And so my genetic profile, my DNA, my bone length, my bone width, all of these things.
Wow.
It takes into consideration. And I might move on the scale based on my weight gain or weight loss or a whole myriad of things. And what that will tell me is where I'm headed in life. And so for my type of profile, there's a certain type of foods that I should eat. There's a certain work rhythm that I should move to.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to get up in the morning and crush a really high intensity workout will produce so much cortisol in my body that I won't be able to process the cortisol for the rest of the day.
Okay.
Whereas if I start my day in meditation or in rest or in flow and do my heavier workouts later on in the day, I can manage that cortisol much better and I'll be much more efficient. Yeah.
Interesting.
It's quite amazing. And before I actually got into it, I dropped all my routines and said, I'm going to go intuitively. What intuitively would I want to do? And what I intuitively went with was exactly what my profile said I should do.
Wow.
So when you go back to what feels good, then that will always, you know, you don't have to read the signs and your body knows.
Yeah. So in summary to the answer to this question that we began this podcast as, the right amount of time is really whatever you choose, right? Like, are you a bad person for getting over a separation in 3 hours? Are you a, you know, whatever judgment, whatever type of person for taking 10 years to get over a relationship? No, it's, you know, do what you need to do. But I think the learning is that we are the ones that you're the one who gets to choose. You are the one who gets to choose. Maybe people are disagreeing with me right now. I'd be like, no, I can't choose that. I got no control over it. Okay, cool. Maybe that's your story. Mm. For me, I feel like I get to choose how long I deal with these things and how much I commit to doing the best that I can to come back to love. And because my truth is that anyone that I've ever been with is an absolutely awesome person. And my truth is that I want them to have the most amazing life in this lifetime as possible, beyond anything. You know, that's my truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a choice. Your willingness to sit with your level of darkness and the depth that you sit with that darkness will determine. So let's call that your winter. And when you go into this, oh, I've just broken up with someone and I've just had a perceived loss. Well, that's the perceived loss that I'm unconscious to the gain in this present moment. And the depth that I'm willing to go into that winter, like how deep can I go? How much can I really learn from this and fully embody this winter, this breakup period, will determine the length of your summer and your spring.
Yeah.
And so by delaying it and slowly doing it, you're dragging out the winter potentially unnecessarily, which is delaying and probably minimizing the length and the benefits of your summer that's about to come through. So, yeah, I think it's a choice. Sometimes we like, you know, misery loves company. So we like sort of wallowing in and bind. That's addictive sometimes, that self-loathing, self-pity.
Yeah.
And also depending on the relationship, I just thought of that. Depending on the relationship and what occurred in that relationship, you could be replacing one addiction with another addiction. Mm-hmm. So the push-pull of one relationship that you just left or, you know, forced to leave, you're now replacing that with the misery, which is the same actual dopamine release.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many factors in it, but either way, it's a choice, I believe.
Mm. Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that, man. Thank you so much for sharing, Mike. I will see you for another podcast next week. I wish you an incredible week ahead.
Love you, brother.
Love you, brother. Thank you.